Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 5 of the Mr. Lindsay podcast. It's been a while since I have done a podcast. It's been a couple months. It took a couple months hiatus to spend at home, relaxing with family, enjoying the summer, getting ready for the school year, which has just started. And I was really excited to talk about a specific topic that I had a really incredible guest who's going to join me and talk about this topic. However, I've been having some technical issues, and a good friend of mine, Kyle Fox, who lives and has been working in the UK since 2010. He lives in London, and he's Canadian. He's from Mississauga, and he's been living over there. And I wanted to talk to him to get a sense as to how, number one, what it's like being Canadian and being away from Canada, and that type of experience, and what that has been like for him. But also, I wanted to talk with Kyle to get a sense of the differences or the nuances of British culture in comparison to Canadian culture, and the types of things that he notices, and like what that means to him, and how that impacts his life, and just to get a sense as to the different novelties that exist within the UK, things that people might not really notice, whether it be driving on the left-hand side of the road, talking with an accent, the sights and sounds of London, getting to know different people from different parts of the UK, that sort of thing. However, after a couple different tries of hooking up with Kyle and trying to get our conversation recorded, we've run into some roadblocks. And so I wanted to do a justice to my conversation with Kyle, and out of respect for him as a friend, and out of respect for his time, kind of really try to sum up our conversation that we had, because I really feel it was important to truly understand what it's like to really, be away from home and to like experience new things head on, things that like take a lot of gumption and a lot of, risk to kind of take on, whether it be leaving your family behind and going to a new country, whether it be, giving up on what's easy, whether it be, laying down roots, getting a condo in the GTA and starting a new job, but to actually move to a different country where you don't really know anybody, and to find employment and to experience a culture is a very kind of brazen thing to do. So I really kind of look up to Kyle in this way to sort of go out on a limb and to take this huge risk. And what I did was in 2011, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, we decided to go over there and teach in the UK, where we lived in Cambridge, I don't know if people know geography of England really, but Cambridge is about an hour and a half train journey, not even that, from London. It's actually northeast of London in a place called East Anglia, which I think I've had some people from England describe to me as the elephant ear of England. So they have this piece of England that sticks out into the English Channel that's shaped like an elephant ear, and it has a lot of important parts to it, including lots of rich farmland, but also the city of Cambridge, which is known for its prestigious university. And so that's where I lived for a year, where I taught as an occasional teacher in a few schools there. And so I really kind of followed in Kyle's tracks, and I met up with him a few times. We had dinner and some nights on the town, and it was really just an amazing experience. And to kind of think that he's been living that ever since, and it's something that I go back in my mind, kind of reliving these experiences. And for me, it's, I guess the novelty is definitely still there, but for him, I don't really know if Kyle really understands that he's still living in this kind of amazing place where, being in from Canada, North America, you kind of think about it as like this, this very distant and unique space, or living in Europe and living in the UK, and it's very fortunate. So I was able to sort of live out that experience, but I wanted to connect with Kyle now to kind of talk about what's it's like when you really reflect on your life, when you really reflect on, the relationships that you've made, the connections to the local culture. For instance, for Kyle, he's kind of gained an accent, which is understandable. But those are some of the things that happen when you move away. But I talked to Kyle on a bunch of different things. I'll try to sum up our conversation, even though he's not here. It's a little bit silly, but I thought I would try anyway. One thing that I talked to Kyle about was like the differences between Canada and the UK. And Kyle really, what I thought were kind of some stark differences, Kyle really saw living in the UK as like a really easy place to kind of move to. If you're from North America, everyone there speaks English. The TV is somewhat similar. The culture is very similar. And so when it comes to cultural adjustment, when it comes to kind of accepting the norms and accepting what's normal and accepting the values and traditions of a different culture, it's actually quite easy when they're so alike. However, there are a few things about British culture that I found very intriguing and I thought were quite different from Canada. We spoke at length about how in the UK, I really felt that people there had a much more healthier lifestyle. People rode their bikes to work more frequently. The public transportation was more efficient, using buses and trains and the underground and that sort of thing. And everyone seemed to get around a lot faster, and people just didn't drive as much. And Kyle noted this, and really, he really talked about how he thought that because of that, perhaps there's less stress on people. Driving a car is a very stressful activity, and when you take the stress out of that, and you can kind of sit back and enjoy your commute or that sort of thing, it makes life generally easier. And Kyle and I also got into talking about pub culture, and where pubs in communities, and especially in when you live in dense urban centers, which is the UK is really known for, because people live, because the population is so high and people live in these, in all these cities, that there's really pubs everywhere. And what you really learn about these pubs is that they are kind of centers of communities where people come together to meet up for dinner, to chat after work. And this really kind of grow kind of this strong sense of community where people can kind of get together and know what's going on in other people's houses. And it was really distinctly different from what I kind of feel goes on in North America, or in Canada anyway, where you had, people drive home from work, they go into their house, they lock their door, and it kind of stays at that. Well, in British, in Great Britain, people seem to be moving around a lot more. Whether it be, they don't own cars, so there's a lot more walking around. You can meet up with people a lot easier. Stores are smaller, and so people, these sort of big box plazas that we have in North America, whether they be like Costco and these big massive plazas with Staples in them and Best Buy and all these sorts of things, they don't really have that to the same degree in the UK. It really seemed to me people went to the grocery store almost every other day to buy their groceries, rather than sort of these huge weekly purchases that, we make, filling up our carts at Costco and buying enough groceries for an entire year, not having to go back out again. In the UK, that was kind of something that was accepted, getting fresh bread, picking up a bottle of wine from the store, and getting fresh eggs. And it was really kind of this cultural shift that I noticed. And Kyle really hinted at that, which he thought contributed to people, like a positive well-being in people, getting out more and communicating. And although it's funny, Kyle talked about the weather being so poor in the UK. I really didn't notice that as much. Maybe it was just an anomaly for me being there only for 1 year. But I did notice it being rainy, but I'll take rain over snow any day. And the type of cold that they have there, I mean, it does get relatively cold where I was living in East Anglia, but it doesn't last for that long. So instead of having 3 or 4 months of harsh cold, they might have one, or even a few weeks of bitter cold, and then kind of dissipates into this cold, damp feeling as you go outside. And So that's, I think, I really think there's something there with kind of public well-being. And Kyle and I kind of hit at a bunch of other topics, including comparing London and Toronto as sort of these epicenters of the country, and moreover, how these places were viewed by the rest of the country. So, for instance, people in Western Canada have a certain opinion. I mean, I'm talking in general terms, but like people in Western Canada have a certain opinion of people who live in Toronto. People in the East Coast have a certain opinion about people in Toronto, and people in Toronto have a certain opinion about ourselves, about, you know, how important we are to the whole country. And, you know, I don't think it's too big of a stretch to think that, you know, living in the GTA, we do have this really strong gravitational pull towards the United States than we do towards the rest of the country. And I think one of those things has to do with, again, the geographic gap between Toronto and the rest of the country, but also with, you know, people living in Toronto having this affinity for American culture and being really closer to the United States. And Kyle really felt the same way in London, where he hinted at people around the country wanting more work experience would go to London to, you know, build up their portfolios and their contacts and to kind of get their foothold in their field, and then to go back to whatever city they came, you know, whatever city they were originally from, whether it be Cardiff in Wales, or, you know, a place like Leeds, or Coventry, or, you know, wherever it may be in the country, that people would eventually go back to their home cities after being in London for a little bit. And I think that outside perceptions of London, especially from Canadians, that, you know, oh, everything British is in London, where when you really, you know, when you really get to it and on the ground level, London is a very international city, extremely so. There's boroughs of London that are predominantly, you know, a place like Hackney. We didn't really talk about the different areas of London too much with Kyle, but an area like Hackney in London, I believe is northeast London, I think, is very multicultural, with the strong Bengali population and Pakistani population and that sort of thing. And I really found London to be very similar to Toronto in its ethnic makeup and its diversity, and but also in terms of its pull of people from different parts of the country to come to London. So, for instance, my friend Kyle, his wife is from Wales, and she came to London to work, leaving Wales and coming to London. So there are some real comparisons between London and Toronto, and I think they're really justified. And I think it's wrong to say that Toronto, and I think as Canadians, we could say that, you know, Toronto does not exemplify what it means to be Canadian in the same way that London doesn't exemplify what it means to be British. I think people who live in, especially even people who live in Cambridge, even though people who live in Cambridge sometimes commute to London for work, there's even regional accents and regional differences within East Anglia than there is in, you know, compared to in a place like London. And so the same is said for people who live in Kitchener, people who live in Windsor, people live in Northern Ontario, a place like Thunder Bay or North Bay, or these places are very different than people who live in Toronto. And I don't think it's quite true to this kind of label people as all the same, especially in Ontario, where we have such, you know, true distinctions. And I think people kind of ignore these things. And yeah, those are just kind of the comparisons between the two cities. Kyle and I also talked about briefly, like, and people who haven't been to the UK or lived there maybe don't get this, but like, I really felt living in the UK that there was this obsession with the United States. And not to say anything ill towards the United States, but like living in the UK, I think there was this like glamorized version of as they call it in the UK, they call it the United States America. Although in Canada, obviously, we call the States the States, but in the UK, they call it America. Like, really, there's this glamorized version of America that I think people have. Maybe it's the sort of, you know, the Disney version or the CNN version of what America is. Which is a land of opportunity, Hollywoodized, I suppose you could say, Hollywoodized version of America. And I think in the UK, they kind of have this idea that America is this incredible place, which in many ways it is. But for instance, I just couldn't get over living in Cambridge. I'd walk around and see people wear baseball hats and wear like FUBU shirts and wear American Eagle material clothes and have no idea about who the New York Yankees are or American TV shows, not knowing, what Seinfeld is, really having an idea of America, but really not really understanding too much about the truth of American culture. I lived in a house with my landlord, and his family lived there as well. And his son would just kind of go on and on about Florida and how he wanted to go to Florida so bad. It was his dream to go to Florida. And I didn't really have the heart to tell him that Florida is not exactly how it's portrayed on TV. It's actually kind of a swampy, quite a bit of poverty in Florida. And he didn't really believe me. but yeah, this kind of weird obsession with America and also with American music and whether it be rappers or sort of like pop music. American pop music was becoming more popular in the UK. There might be some something to do with X Factor and sort of American Idol, Simon Cowell, and that kind of thing. But American culture really seemed to be coming infused within British society, and I found that very intriguing. And Kyle somewhat agreed, but he didn't see the full extent to it because I think we didn't talk about football or soccer at all. But that's kind of a big roadblock as to football isn't really that popular in the United States as it is in the UK. It's borderline religion in the UK. So we don't really talk about that too much, but that was something of note. Some other things we talked about. We talked about how, I mentioned that part, not needing a car. We talked about the tube, and anybody who's been to London can attest to the efficiency of the London Underground. And for me, being in London and seeing how the transportation network exists in London is absolutely incredible. And this is with the bus system as well, but just you riding the tube and able to get around to so many different places at a decent rate of speed, so efficiently and easily is really incredible. And coming from Toronto and being a automotive commute, someone who commutes in Toronto, by using a car, I found being in London and getting around was just so convenient. And Kyle spoke at length about this and how, he didn't really use the underground anymore too much to get to work. He did use something called Boris bikes, and Boris bikes are basically bikes that you can you rent, essentially. We have them in Toronto now too, but they started in London. But using bikes to get around from place to place, and bikes that you don't own, but you just sort of, you pay for them in installments in the same way that you pay for a trip on the tube. And I mean, it really is amazing that over the course of I believe at some point in the Victorian times, I'd have to look it up, where they started building the London Underground. And I believe it was Brunel, who's an architect in the UK who designed trains and locomotives and the rail system. And I think he was the first ones to begin integrating subways. And I think what some of the first issues were across the River Thames, which is this river that cuts through London, basically cuts London in half. They had issues with bridges getting too full and people not able to get across the bridges, that they began to build tunnels underneath the Thames. And that was sort of that's what instigated the building of the tube. But because it's been around for so long, that's actually what has contributed to the size and the breadth of London's underground system. And so when you look at something like Toronto or any other, maybe not North American city, but definitely Canadian cities, would be Montreal or Vancouver, their systems just aren't as developed because they're not as new. Or sorry, they're not as old. So because, they've been developing the systems, probably over the past 50, 60 years, they haven't been around as long. They haven't been able to do as much. And because costs are so high now, it makes building out the underground a lot harder. And so that was something I noticed living in the UK, was the efficiency of travel. Some other things I talked to Kyle about was, just checking my notes here, was the literacy levels in the UK. And this is anecdotally, as someone who lived there, someone who's kind of parachuted in there for a year, and then I parachuted myself back out again. I really noticed how the level of literacy seemed to be a little bit higher. There were more bookstores. They, you know, from my vantage point, in the UK, they have a bookstore called Waterstones, which, if you're listening to this and you live in the UK, you're like, oh yeah, duh, of course we do. But in North America or in Canada, we have our bookstores called Indigo and Chapters. And they're usually in big, they're usually in malls or in big box plazas. But I just found, I thought Waterstones were everywhere, and you know, they were huge and they're always full of people. And I found that because people commuted more, that I always saw, whether I was on a bus going to work or whether I was riding the train going to my school in the morning, I saw a lot of people reading magazines, reading books, reading Kindles. People took the time to read. And that's not to say that that's not happening in North America or that's not happening in Canada. However, it was something that I really noticed. And Kyle mentioned to me about the large ads that they would have for books. And I actually remember them seeing them in, whether it be Victoria Station or King's Cross, wherever it was, big, huge billboards for books. And, you know, now that I think about it, I can't remember the last time I saw advertisement for a book. And it was something I really noticed, like you'd go into a restaurant, or if I was going into a pub on my way home from work to relax or wait for a train, I would see literally people reading in the pub. And so that's something I started to do. And I, you know, would strike up conversations with people there who were also reading, and they'd ask me about my book, and there was an exchange of ideas, and we would talk about, you know, different things about different authors and themes and that sort of thing. So it really struck me how literate this society was. And I think having the BBC, obviously we had the CBC, but I think the BBC had a lot of really amazing programming that really encouraged and like really advocated for people to be, you know, to be heavy into reading. And as a teacher, it's something that I really noticed in students was, you know, this strong connection to reading. And I mean, that's not, again, but again, it's not something I notice a huge difference with now living in Canada. Obviously, Canadian students like to read too, and Canadian people like to read too. But I'm really curious to see a sort of comparison between Canada and the UK, and trying to get an idea as to, you know, is there something there? Is there something in their lifestyle that allows people to, you know, read more? And obviously with reading more comes all sorts of advantages. People are more more intelligent, people are more sensible, they're more engaged politically, they're happier, you know, right? There's all sorts of advantages to reading that for some reason I think we could have a little bit more of in Canada. And something that people who haven't been to the UK might not notice is there's a lot more public space. And when I say sort of public space, I mean usable public space, or in other terms, public space that is being used, or, you know, parks that people sit in. Kyle mentioned museums being free. So whether it be the Imperial War Museum or, you know, the Museum of Modern Art in London, Trafalgar Square, we can go in and, you know, look at paintings of Monet and Picasso for free. I mean, having these things be free, I mean, you're really advocating to the public to be educated and to care about knowledge and to really influence people to better themselves intellectually. And so I really thought that Kyle made a good point when he talked about that, because I remember going to museums and not having to pay. And I think that was a sign of that, you know, people should be people should take pride in these things, and they should be free, and they should be sort of something that, you know, that as a civilization, you kind of put on the mantelpiece of your civilization and go, this is what we've accomplished. It's to be admired, and everybody should, you know, it should be sort of public access, should be universal. And I really thought those things are quite admirable. And also, there's something to be said about these open parks, like parks that are meant. And so, for instance, in London, they have something called Hyde Park, H-Y-D-E, which is a massive park. I don't know whether it's like the same size as Central Park or the same size as Hyde Park in Toronto. But this park is, you know, a pond and walking trails. And they have this place, this area of the park where people stand up and will debate each other on things. I think it's called Speaker's Corner. Well, you know, you stand up on this little platform and you can go and speak about, you know, a political issue or a religious issue or some sort of social justice issue. And you go up and you express your opinion and people gather there and listen. And then that person will step down and other people will step up and be able to openly express and to comment and to kind of like criticize each other, but criticize each other constructively. And I remember standing there watching one of these debates take place and going, this is amazing. I've never seen anything like this before. And I go, I wonder why this doesn't exist in Canada. What if this happened in Canada, would people view this as a problem? You know, oh, this is an argument, or this is wrong, or people shouldn't be confronting each other in this way. I found it very unique that was happening. And in these park spaces, you know, beginning because their weather gets warmer earlier, and as in Canada, we probably have trouble understanding this, but in April, it gets quite warm. So I remember, you know, flowers blooming at the beginning of April, you know, or the end of March, and it being 20 degrees in April. And, you know, these big parks in Cambridge, we had these, you know, we had a few parks, one of which is called Parker's Peace, which is somewhat in the center of town, where you had people just gather, play frisbee, have picnics, sit down, do schoolwork. It was like this public space that, I mean, it was just grass for the most part, but it was out in public with other people. And it was socially acceptable and encouraged for people to sit there and, you know, do what they needed to do. And I really felt that, you know, in North America, people would just be more, I'm trying to think of the right word, but people would be more willing or more likely to take what they would do that, and they just do it inside their own homes. So I really think there's some sort of communal, sort of collective sense of community that was connected to these lands that we don't really have in Canada. And that's not to say like people don't gather in parks or like hang out and stuff, which is not true. We do. But to the degree that they did it in London, it was almost like it was almost part and parcel of their culture. Like there was some sort of cultural connection that existed that made these open spaces safe for everybody to get to. And another thing I didn't talk to Kyle about was British food. A lot of people have all sorts of ideas about, you know, British cuisine is gross or British food is garbage and this and that. That's all I heard going to the UK. And leaving England and leaving the UK when I did, I just love British cuisine so much. I mean, to me, it was so good. The whole time I was there, whether it be like Yorkshire pudding, bangers and mash, English style breakfast with, you know, I don't know if anyone's been to England, but they have beans in their breakfast. They have they'll eat like beans and gravy with their breakfast and like a fresh tomato. And I just thought it was amazing. And, you know, whether you go to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant or Jamie Oliver has a chain of restaurants in the UK, there's just British cuisine, you know, had something for everybody. There's just a lot of really great food and cuisine choices that come from the UK. And I just loved every bit of it. A lot of fresh vegetables, beets, potatoes, fresh eggs, farm fresh beans, all sorts of different things that exist in the UK. And because their climate allots for it, you get a lot of these crops year round. And I just found it so fresh to eat this stuff. And Milk is cheaper. Cheese is cheaper. Eggs are cheaper in the UK. That really made a huge difference. And again, all local and all fresh, all coming from the area. And I really kind of, it's kind of like a, I got a kind of bone to pick with people who kind of rip on British cuisine because I just think it's amazing. The other thing that I really found amazing too was in connection with pub culture was the perry and the ciders that they would have in the UK. And this is when I was there in 2010, this is something that they initially introduced at this time in Canada, where things like Strongbow begin to show its face in Canada. But in the UK, it's really sort of a unique niche where they have these ciders, but sometimes these ciders, they have like specific pear cider houses or apple cider houses where they're super fresh and there's actually lots of pulp. And some of these ciders are at 10, 12% ciders and they're quite intense flavors. And it's something that I haven't really seen it taken to that level here in Canada. While we do have ciders here, it just wasn't as popular. And that's something I really enjoyed taking a part in while I was living in the UK, was getting some of these ciders, although some of them are really strong. They were super good. I can't really think of anything else to add on this podcast, but it's really great catching up with Kyle. He's just such an amazing guy. He's really carved out his own life in a different country, and I really hope to get back to living in, not living in the UK, but definitely back to visiting the UK in the future. There's so many great places to visit, and it has something for everybody. Whether you love history, whether you love natural wonders. Whether you just love, Scotch, there's Scotch tours. There's just so much there for people to see. And, I really hope one day to go back and visit him soon. I actually told him I want to climb, a mountain in Wales. So I'm really kind of getting anxious for that because I think that'd be an amazing trip. But, thanks for listening to episode 5 of my podcast. Coming up on episode 6, I'm going to be speaking with my brother about, a really important topic that needs to be discussed and it needs to be discussed in detail, and that's wrestling. And so we're going to talk about Hulk Hogan, the NWO. We're going to talk about ladder matches, all that great stuff, Vince McMahon. It's really going to be amazing, and I look forward to that in the coming weeks. Thanks for listening to this podcast, and have an amazing day. Bye.